You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to the show. Holy cow, another week. You know, I said that we're in a pretty big stretch of guests here. Last week we had my friend and now yours, Congressman Adam Kinzinger. That was a really incredible discussion. And if you want to hear that or you want to hear this one again, every one of these episodes is available as a podcast on civicmedia.com. Because, hey, we got some powerhouse people. We have joining us our one old friend and one new friend. Dear old friend, Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. What's up, buddy?
Always good, happy to be here.
Dude, yes. We were just here a little while ago. I was like, yes. We have to get like you know a chair saved for you here.
A nice little chair with my name on it.
It'd be great. Yes, embroidered microphone or something. Yeah, and he brings a friend with him who is a wonderful guy, Officer Harry Dunn, who was a Capitol Police officer. He's going to talk about what he's doing here, but also we're going to talk about what happened on January 6th, because we talked about that last week with Adam Kinzinger.
Yeah. No, happy to be here, man. And, you know, as long as people are trying to whitewash and downplay what happened that day, or minimize, or flat out erase it from our history, they'll meet my face pushing back against it.
So. Yeah, hey, and I appreciate that because that, you know, it's your face and your name has become synonymous with January 6th.
Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. Well, I would rather have someone like yourself than someone like Donald Trump.
Well, thank you.
You know, yeah, because you represent the good that happened. Not a lot of good happened that day, but you held and you kept a lot of people safe.
A lot of people say that, you know, Officer Dunn, we're so sorry that we had to come to know you under these circumstances, but we're so glad that we know you now, fighting and standing up for what's right and continuing to do so, especially in a time where so many people have forgotten what that looks like.
Yeah. You know, and in preparation for this discussion and then last week, I actually started reading the January 6th report. Holy crap, is that thing big.
You mean the one that Republicans have accused them of destroying and hiding?
Yeah.
Like it's literally online. You just go.
Yeah. There's like an audio book as well. Mm-hmm. And it's 24 hours long, by the way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the things that I learned was how far in advance people learned, you know, knew about this. I learned that from Adam Kinzinger's book, you know, and on 1:42 in the morning on December 19th, Donald Trump tweeted out, "Big protest in D.C. on January 6th. Be there, will be wild." Talk about that day.
You know, where do I even start, man? Like, I mean, so many people knew in advance, sure. And I think that's one of the things that got me really frustrated with obviously what happened. Frontline officers, majority of the people that were there that day, not chiefs, not leadership, just the frontline beat officers. We see at the Capitol First Amendment protest all the time. Mm-hmm. People come in there protesting about anything. And that's what we expected it to be. I mean, for the most part, we expected arrest. They told us, hey, guys, some of y'all might have to stay late. We're expecting some, you know, potential first demonstration lockups. Civil disobedience. Civil.
Yeah.
Keyword civil. Not a entire attempted takeover of the, you know, U.S. government. So, you know, I show up to work at 6:45 or so. We have a roll call at 7. And they're giving us our orders. I mean, listen, this is in the middle of COVID, too.
Yeah.
The Capitol's closed to the public. It had been closed for months. Washington, D.C., everybody's working from home. Traffic is a breeze getting in and out of, I mean, any major city, right? Think about it. COVID, nobody's working.
Yeah.
Everybody's working from home. So as first responders, we had the easiest commute going into work, no traffic. This was great. When you show up to work that morning, now and this is obviously looking back at it, but going in, I didn't think anything, but you see people in the street and hundreds of people. I mean, it's 6 in the morning. I mean, middle of January. Now it's not Wisconsin cold, but I mean, it's 25 degrees out there, and it's,
right.
You know, 6 in the morning. People are out walking around, and it had flags, American flags. I'm like, this is crazy. So as the day continued to go on, the crowds at the Capitol just swelled. I mean, there were officers calling out, hey, we got a group of 100 people headed toward the Capitol from the White House, or hey, we have a group of 75 making their way to the Capitol from the direction of the Supreme Court. And it was just constantly over and over again, people putting out. And next thing you know, the Capitol is just saturated with people. It looked like a pep rally for Trump. I mean, you had individuals out there singing the national anthem. They were waving the flags. They playing cornhole. I mean, I'm exaggerating, but I mean, it just seemed like a pep rally.
Yeah.
And then one, I don't know what the actual action that caused the violence.
To turn, yeah.
But it just made an ugly turn. One of the things that made me realize before I believe it got violent was they discovered pipe bombs at the DNC and the RNC, respectively. And those two incidents combined with the continued saturation of people at the Capitol, it turned into like, a pressure cooker, almost. Like, this is bad. This is bad. If it was a movie, like, the dramatic, the music would be playing, the build-up, and then
pop.
And that's kind of what happened. And for over 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever, officers, myself, my coworkers were fighting. Now, people say we protected democracy, and, I mean, that's a hell of a byproduct, I believe, of what we did. We were just trying to stay alive and make it home to our families,
Right. Protect
the members of Congress. I wasn't thinking in that moment, guys, we got to protect democracy.
Right.
I'm trying to stay alive. I got a daughter that I need to go home to. My coworkers had their husbands, their wives that they needed to go home to. And members of Congress, we need to protect every single hair on their head, whether it was Marjorie Taylor Greene, whether it was Ron Johnson, whether it was AOC, but whether it was AOC, whether it was Chuck Schumer, anybody, our job was to protect those individuals because that was our job.
So what's crazy is like you had to protect people like Ron Johnson who deny the very existence of what happened.
Calls it Antifa.
Right.
BLM, Black Lives Matter and Antifa. I mean, that was just despicable, but...
Yeah, and it was interesting, or the peaceful protest, which, by the way, one of the things I learned is, you know, in a peaceful protest, I didn't realize that those had people that would bring body armor or, you know, weapons and knives and bats and all those things. And one of the things that was interesting, too, in reading the report is how there was like 26,000 people in the Ellipse.
Yeah.
But Trump was pissed off because there were magnetometers. He wanted to go because they're not here for him. And there were just as many people outside who refused to go through the magnetometers. Mm. Why is that? Because it's peaceful, clearly. And, you know, that was fascinating to hear. And then hear about everything that was confiscated from people that did go in.
Well, let's define what peaceful means, because I feel like we have to now.
Yeah, right.
Now, peaceful does not mean kumbaya out there
right. In
this day and age. Peaceful means we didn't get the hell beat out of us. That's what peaceful meant.
Typically, now, there's no fatalities.
Yeah, typically, right? But these people were angry. I've been at quote peaceful protests where we got cussed out and, you know, but there was no violence towards us. So that's peaceful. The peaceful is, in this, the way we're describing it, is without violence.
Right.
Mm. It wasn't with peace. Because when people protest, people are very passionate about the things. Rightfully so.
Yeah.
Rightfully so. And then, you know, a lot of times police officers or the security or whatever, we're just the lightning rod that takes the brunt of it. But this case, we were standing in the way of these insurrectionists who called us traitors, who called us that we were not upholding our oath. And we were in their way stopping them from stopping the certification of the election. We were the traitors. We were the bad guys that day. Make that make sense.
It's interesting, and it's so well put how you call January 6th the most well-documented crime scene in history. That's so, like, on point.
One of the things people, Donald Trump, Republicans, Ron Johnson, all these people have said, we're the Democrats or the left or doing Joe Biden's DOJ are trying to shape the narrative about January 6th. There's no narrative to shape. Turn your TV down on silent and just press play. Yep. Nobody has to say a word. I don't have to say a word. Joe Biden didn't have to say a word. Press play.
Michelle,
and you tell me. Like,
Michelle Bachmann said, like a week ago, I believe, she said that if you would see the images from January 6th, it would represent more a March for Life protest than it would anything violent. I don't know how you make that leap.
She's a liar.
She's insane.
She's a liar. She's insane. She's delusional. Yeah. Because, okay, you know what? Everybody listen now. Pull out your phone and Google March for Life, Washington, D.C. Mm-hmm. Okay? Do that. Compare that. Now Google January 6, 2021, U.S. Capitol. Now compare the two. I've worked March for Life protests. There were people just marching, and they would march to the Supreme Court, and they were singing, reading Bible verses. Yes, they were very peaceful, even and really peaceful. They weren't cussing us out. They were so nice and friendly to us.
Yeah.
I mean, they gave us candy bars. They were really nice to us at the March for Life.
Yeah,
that didn't happen on January 6th. Give me a break.
No, and it's, you know, it's it really is a wild stretch to go from, you know, seeing what happened. I remember what happened.
Yeah.
I don't remember like you, but I remember seeing everything that happened. And I mean, maybe there was a peaceful-ish moment at the Ellipse when Donald Trump was talking about, but because all of the weapons were taken away, what happened at the Capitol was not peaceful whatsoever.
At all.
No. And thank you for that. I'm going to wrap this up about this topic, and we're going to go into why you're here. Here at in the next segment, we're going to hear from our friend Ahmaud Rivera Wagner. What's up, buddy?
Hey.
So we'll be right back here in the Rational Revolution.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back. We got Officer Harry Dunn. We got Representative Ahmaud Rivera Wagner. And me, some guy on the show. I have to say, Officer Dunn, I listened today to your testimony for the first time. And that was really, really hard to hear. As a white guy who knows better, as a white guy who's in a mixed marriage, who has mixed race children, hearing that, it was upsetting. And I'm really sorry you went through that.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that sentiment. I will say this. I don't like people apologizing for what I went through that didn't have anything to do with it. Mm-hmm. So I accept your I accept it, but the people who need to apologize aren't. And I don't think that you should have to apologize on their behalf. And I understand. I get it. Yeah, I receive it. But let's stop apologizing. Not you, but we got to stop apologizing for what other people are doing that's foolish and hold them accountable and make them own it. It's not on us.
It was interesting, you know, last week, Adam Kinzinger, who does send his best.
Love Adam. Hey, Adam.
Yeah, I'll text him after. Yeah. He had really good things to say about you.
Yeah.
But he said, because we talked about this, and he said, you know, I was almost ready to put January 6th behind me. And he said, I think America was almost ready to put January 6th behind us. And then Trump got elected, and then 1,500 plus people who should have been in prison were released.
Let back on the street.
How did you feel about that?
You know, so my thoughts when it comes to the pardons, look, that's what Donald Trump said he was going to do it.
Yep.
He said he was from day one. I spent a lot of time here in Wisconsin campaigning hard to keep him out of the White House. That's why me and a couple officers did. We knew that this was coming.
Yeah.
So when he did it, it wasn't a surprise for me. I mean, so I had time to prepare, right? But it still was a gut punch. Like it still yeah. was. It still was. But my biggest anger, and I love people who believe in democracy and all this stuff, but everybody that's shocked and surprised mm-hmm. that he did it, where were you before he did it? If you're shocked yeah. and surprised, that means you weren't paying attention to what he said he was going to do before the election.
Yeah. I have it in my notes that, you know, we saw it coming and you hope it's not going to happen. And even though you get this thing in the back of your head knowing it's coming. But when that reality hits, we'll bring him out in yeah. here. What do you?
Well, one of the reasons I'm inspired by Officer Dunn is, you know, January 6th is somewhat infamous here in Green Bay.
Yeah, right.
So yeah. One.
Oh, with you?
Right.
Oh, my God.
So, you know, just this January 6th, we got sworn in, one of the fairest yeah. maps we've ever had. So yes. I have this one memory of January 6th, which is literally littered with nothing but joy, bipartisan camaraderie, yep. celebration. We saw meemaws and grandchildren. We saw aunts and uncles. You know, yeah. this beautiful moment on this January 6th, 4 years to the day.
Yeah.
I was sitting in my office because we had to essentially evacuate City Hall mm-hmm. because we had gotten information leading right after the election that there was going to be protest. And we saw buses being led by leaders of white supremacy groups
yeah.
recruiting people to go to the Capitol and some people recruiting them to protest at one point the mayor's house.
Yep.
But then they changed it to the City Hall.
Yep.
In the preparation, as we started seeing this, we were warning the FBI, mm-hmm. we're warning other people, something is going on. We started seeing warning signs where they were actually preparing. For example, we found screenshots later of the planning group saying that government's going to be shut down for a couple months, that you should bring water and food, and you should bring groceries home, that you should get flashlights and batteries. And then on January 6th, when I sat inside my office, one of the few people still there, we had people calling for the Proud Boys to come get me,
yep.
the mayor, and the first black clerk in the city's history, saying that we personally stole the election for Joe Biden. And so January 6th, and then—
And she served Republicans and Democrats last.
Right. And then what was terrifying is I had friends that were working in the Capitol. All of a sudden, it was like the world went silent.
Yeah.
And they just dispersed. And no one knew what was happening. And I started getting the trickle-in text that they're trying to kill us. They're breaking into the building. And then they just stopped communicating. And so then I ran home. My husband calls me and says, I need you to be home. We turn on the TV and we literally saw the Capitol on fire. And that began years of stalking, mm-hmm. harassing. They believed that I was a Facebook employee yeah. that made up getting married to my husband. yeah. So they started stalking him at the hospitals to find him. We got racist epithets. We got homophobic slurs. We had them vandalize my car. We had one person who was so convinced that we were hiding that he physically assaulted a city employee when they went to go look at him. Yeah. We had to press charges against him. So January 6th to me, not only was both criminal in its process, the ripple effects reverberated across the country to yeah. all these places like Green Bay, Wisconsin, that for years spent trying to defend itself against lies and innuendos, from the ridiculous like that there are midgets in the machines flipping the ballots to the Sirius where they were asking for my birth records to see because they thought I was undocumented and I was imported from the Middle East. And so, you know, what you went through, we only have a small taste of it. But part of the reason why we were excited to bring him is that democracy doesn't only work when it works in your favor. Mm-hmm. That democracy is meant to be defended up and down the ballot, whether you win or not. And that we have to hold the people accountable that choose violence and the threat of violence as the answer to get their neighbor, friend, resident to vote in a certain way. And so we need to hold all elected officials accountable. Democrats that were afraid to hold them accountable and Republicans that are justifying this at every level of the ballot. We had these issues at the local Common Council where they refused to acknowledge the election results. We watched Supreme Court candidates. We watched U.S. Senate candidates. We watched gubernatorial candidates all say that January 6th wasn't a bad thing. It should be bipartisan to condemn the actions that happened to the officer. So we're here to have a real conversation in one of the places where democracy was threatened deeply to talk about how do we hold each other accountable for building a stronger and believing in a stronger democracy, but how do we talk to the people who use violence as the currency for their democracy and hold them accountable?
It really is something that just boggles my mind how, you know, you could see something so raw, so true. Okay, it happened. It happened.
Yeah.
And it, like you say, it happened whether you want to listen to the commentary of the talking heads on the news guiding you through what's happening, or just shut the damn TV off and see for yourself that happened. And then you have this whole group of people trying to whitewash it, trying to say it was peaceful, trying to I don't understand how that group of people can take something so obviously true and turn that into, nope, that was.
Well, you know what?
Oh, and we'll finish that thought here.
Yeah.
That was Officer Dunn here on the other side of the break here on the Rational Revolution. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. I hope you guys made it through the break because I had a guy here to my left chomping at the bit. We were talking about how someone can take something so real and twist it. And Officer Harry Dunn here from the Capitol Police.
Yeah, you know, listen, right after January 6th, I mean like immediate, the night of, the day after, the day, Republican leaders, Republican members of Congress,
right,
Lindsey Graham specifically, I'm done. Count me out. Yeah. I'm done with him.
Kevin McCarthy.
The Donald Trump, the president bears responsibility for what happened. Mitch McConnell, Donald Trump is morally responsible for what happened. Every single one said that. Mm-hmm. All of the Republican leaders. You know what happened? Donald Trump got to him. And they said, nope, you're right. You're right, Mr. We have to stick with you. And they failed to condemn him. This was their opportunity to be done with Donald Trump. And this isn't about Republicanism, liberal, conservative. This isn't about that. It's just about doing what's right.
Mm-hmm.
They had the opportunity to do it. And you know what? Like, it's political suicide to go against Donald Trump.
It is. And that's what Ron Johnson said. And you know, it's funny and it's crazy. On January 7th, my article that I wrote about Ron Johnson saying it was political suicide that kind of blew up. That I didn't hear from him for a month. As it dropped, we were talking about December 1st is when my article about him was released. On January 7th, he sends me a text out of the blue saying I'm a low-life weasel and like calling me names and all of this stuff. And I respond back to him. I said, Ron, they're cleaning up blood on the floor of your workplace. In the halls of democracy, they're cleaning up someone's blood who was murdered.
Yeah.
And you're worried about me?
Why didn't he say that to Donald Trump? That
text, right, right.
Send that text to Donald Trump, Ron.
Right.
It's pathetic. So well, that's what they want to do. They know that it's wrong.
Yeah.
They know that it. They don't have the moral courage to speak out against it because it's political suicide. Damn my career if I have to cave to my morals and values, which so many people in the Republican side have done. Ron Johnson, Mitch McConnell, Lindsey Graham, it's Kevin McCarthy. All of you have caved to Donald Trump, and you have zero moral courage or character. You can't do it. And you know what? What's happening now? And if I can talk about why I'm here now.
Yeah, please, absolutely.
I'm here now because here in Wisconsin, there's an individual running for the Supreme Court, April the 1st, Bradley Schimmel. Listen, I couldn't tell you 2-3 policies that Bradley Schimmel has, but I can tell you one thing. He failed to condemn President Trump for pardoning the people who attacked us. In fact, he doubled down and said those people couldn't get a fair trial and that Donald Trump has the right to do. So what he said, he tries to say if you attack law enforcement, you should be held accountable. But then he turns around and says, right. Donald Trump has the ability to pardon who he wants.
The party of back to blue.
So what Bradley Schimmel is doing, what he's doing is playing both sides. So Donald Trump, he won't draw Donald Trump's ire because what? It's political suicide. The point is you can't play both sides when it comes to this.
That's right.
The only acceptable response is Donald Trump is wrong for pardoning the people who attacked law enforcement. Period.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
No asterisk next to it. No further explanation needed. You're wrong for what you did. But we can't get there. And that's why I'm here.
Yeah, talk about that.
You know, if he didn't make those comments, I'm probably not here right now. I mean, I love Wisconsin. So maybe not when it's 5 degrees outside, you know. But I probably wouldn't be here right now. Like I said, I couldn't tell you his policy on any other stance. But anytime anybody is downplaying or minimizing what me and my coworkers went through, I'm going to push back. Especially if that individual happens to be running for a trusted public office. So if we can't trust you to stand up and do what's right, how can the people of Wisconsin trust you that you'll continue to believe and serve, faithfully discharge the duties of a Supreme Court justice?
Right.
If they can't even count on you to do what's morally right and condemn violence against police officers.
That oath says all enemies, foreign and domestic.
And we got a lot of domestic ones.
Yeah.
Christopher Wray, you know, the former FBI director, said that these people were domestic terrorists.
Yeah.
I agree.
Well, and you know, and it's insane how, you know, Kevin McCarthy that night found his moral courage only to lose it weeks later when he was, you know, I was just down in the neighborhood of Mar-a-Lago.
He was summoned.
Just wanted to go say hi.
He was summoned.
You know, and it's reprehensible. And what do you think about this?
Well, I mean, one of the reasons I'm excited to have Officer Dunn here is I do think that January 6th and what happened in the aftermath also represents the worst of this country. But the years that preceded was a lot of the ways in which we organized people around, not right and left, but as you love to say,
yes,
right and wrong.
Yes.
And one of the things, we saw that here, right? We had a MAGA council who were trying to defund our clerk's department, who was giving aid and room for Michael Gableman to spend up to $2 to $4 million of taxpayer dollars just trying to justify the January 6th attacks by saying that there was election interference that never manifested itself, that we had another investigation by the state Senate into the city. But what we saw is when we took the politics out and we actually said, what do we believe as a community is right and wrong? What we saw is a complete change in the politics of our community. Mm-hmm. That we literally went from Gableman announcing his investigation at the Common Council in Green Bay, Wisconsin, to having a pro-democracy majority, to re-electing the mayor of Green Bay, to electing Judge Janet Persiewicz, and electing the first openly gay biracial guy ever to represent Wisconsin. And because, not because of those identities, but because we turned into this community versus on it or on each other. And I think that's what I want to make sure, and I'm excited about having the officer here, is because that is what's happening. And while national politics may not reflect that, what we've seen is when we actually tell the truth, that we reflect the things that are happening in our communities. And we tell people to make a choice about their values. Places like Green Bay choose each other.
Yeah.
They choose to be neighborly. They choose to condemn the attacks on police officers. They condemn the acts of violence that happen and any type of protest. And that is the vast majority of people in this country, the vast majority of people in the state and in the city. And so I wanted to bring him here to remind everybody that regardless of what's happening at the national level, we cannot buy into the idea that these types of actions, this kind of violence, should go away. Yeah. It should be ignored. That people should be held accountable, both in courts of law, but even at the ballot box, that we have to vote our values. And our values is that we take care of each other and we respect the people who protect us and protect our democracy. And we can never lose sight of that.
Yeah. And I know I appreciate, you know, you're putting up temporary residence here. You were here with, you were here supporting our dear friend, Kristen Lyerly.
Yeah, love Kristen.
She's a wonderful person, dear friend to all of us. And you're back, you know. And how can people support what you do?
Well, see, I'm an American citizen, a person who loves and cares about his country. Mm-hmm. Before I'm Officer Dunn.
You know what? Before you keep going, one of the things that I think you would like this because this will go really well. On Inauguration Day, I texted Kinzinger and I asked him, "How you doing, bud?" Because he just got his pardon from Biden, which he didn't know was coming.
I did too.
Oh yes, right, right.
President, I got a pardon.
Right. Holy crap! Yeah. I asked him. I'm like, "How are you feeling?" And he goes, "This sucks, but I am still optimistic."
Mm.
You know,
he said the same thing when we've talked. But listen, I love this country, and I'm going to fight for it. Not as an officer, Joe Biden. And you talked earlier, Ahmad, about January 6th being a memorable date. Joe Biden turned around my January 6th a year after that when he presented me with the Presidential Citizens Medal.
Yeah. Mm.
So he turned one of the darkest days into one of the proudest days of my life. And I appreciate that. But when I accepted that medal, I didn't accept, a lot of my coworkers, they wore their uniforms. They wore their police uniforms, the shine. I wore a suit because I didn't accept it as Officer Harry Dunn. I accepted as Citizen Harry Dunn because I'm doing this work that I'm doing. It wasn't as an officer. It's just because I care about this country. I care about what's right. So that's why I'm out here. I started a PAC. I know Harry Dunn's Democracy Defenders, Democracy Defenders PAC. You could check that out. I have a Substack. It's called Standing Our Ground. And I just want to just reach people where they are. Mm. I mean, I am all across the country. I just endorsed the governor's race in Michigan, and Jocelyn Benson. We'll be looking at New Jersey, Virginia. I mean, there's so much we can do before 2026, the midterms. Mm-hmm. April 1st, yeah. April 1st here. Just please check it out. I wrote a book called Standing My Ground, Capitol Police Officers Fight for Accountability After January 6th. And you know what? A lot of people have said, let's move on from January 6th. You know, I would love nothing more. I would love nothing more to.
That'd be great.
But
right?
We move on once you have accountability.
Correct.
And also, Donald Trump keeps bringing up January 6th.
Right.
On Sunday, on Air Force One, he said that the government attacked the January 6th rioters. The police officers was wrong to attack those people. Mm. And he said this on Sunday.
Right.
So he's still bringing it up. And, you know, as long as you are, I'm going to keep showing up.
So. Well, and it's so funny because he says that on Air Force One, and then he goes to the Super Bowl and says, "We love our law enforcement." Shut the hell up. No, you do not. Because you cannot have both things.
You
cannot love your law enforcement and back the blue and then let out 1,500 people who beat the hell out of police officers and killed one of them, killed multiple.
Well, the only logical reason I could think, he doesn't view us as law enforcement officers. He viewed us as people who stopped his plan. We were obstacles. So he doesn't see us as police officers. So maybe he supports people that actually believe in upholding the rule of law.
Republican police officers.
Yeah. I can say that.
Yeah, I won't say that because I got friends that are Republicans.
Well, I will but say
I do too. I mean, I do too.
I don't even think it's just about Republican police officers. It's if you agree with him or not.
Right.
There was a time, as you were saying really earlier, there was a time where there was bipartisan condemnation of what was happening. It was, honestly, we were all like, maybe this is
Mike
the
Gallagher.
Moment. Right.
Yeah.
And we had the local, and I always like to bring it back local, we had Mike Gallagher just opposing a nominee where folks use violent rhetoric and swatted him and his family as newborn babies, right? Here, right in the 8th Congressional District, because they didn't agree with Donald Trump. He didn't agree with the impeachment of this particular person. And those MAGA extremists decided, despite being a lifelong Republican, probably one of the rising stars of the Republican Party, and who was so violently attacked verbally and his family that is now out of politics. And I think we just need to realize that this is, you and I love you say this all the time, it really as in this moment, it's not always as right and left. It really is about right and wrong.
Yeah.
And even Republicans that do not agree with them, they're willing to use these tactics and methodologies and apologize for their violence. And we have to hold people accountable.
Well, Kinzinger had to move half a country away.
Ugh. Yeah.
You know, like it's wild. So you also have a podcast, Clean Up on Aisle 45.
Clean Up on Aisle 45.
I love that title.
Yeah,
that's
hilarious. People have wondered, like, we can get that wherever, Clean Up on Aisle 45. That's actually,
I love it.
I enjoy doing that. We just talk about the happenings of the Justice Department, Trump's Justice Department. Now, one thing I noticed about the Trump's Justice Department, by the way, the DOJ for the last couple of years have always been the plaintiffs and going after people. This administration, the 3 weeks old, they sure are doing a lot of time on the defensive right now.
Yeah, Trump's used to being a defendant.
So it may only make sense that the DOJ is literally the defendant in every court case.
So we got 30 seconds. I want to know what makes you hopeful about our future.
People are still talking about it. People care. Mm-hmm. And that's what, listen, everybody listening, form an opinion, get educated about your candidate. Before election day, don't wait till after election day to have an opinion. The time is now. Let's not wait till 2026. Get involved now.
Capitol Police Officer Harry Dunn, my dear friend, Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. You guys, this was amazing.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You got a friend for life. Rational Revolution. We'll be right back after this.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Oh, man. I don't know how to follow that up. I just play music for 5 minutes and I'll shut up. And it's like, wow, that was an incredible discussion. Officer Harry Dunn from the Capitol Police, who was part of January 6th, you know, one of the heroes, and was brought here by our dear friend, Representative Ahmaud Rivera-Wagner. That was amazing. And I'm going to talk about that in a second. But first and foremost, doing this, I don't realize there's other people on the other side of the microphone. We got a voicemail from our dear friend Ellen in Cedarburg. I heard you, Ellen. I love that. Thank you so much, and I appreciate you listening. So I really wanted to give her a shout out. But so back to all of this. It was interesting to hear Officer Dunn say that what gives him hope was that people keep talking about it and people don't forget. And I think that's so important because they're trying so damn hard to get you to forget. And people will tell you, we're going to get past January 6th. Don't ever forget it. And, you know, what happened, it's so much bigger than the attack. The attack was terrible, and I don't want to downplay it, but January 6th, it symbolizes just like everything that is wrong with this type of politics, with Trumpism. I'll say it, with Trumpism. And this is why people harp on this, and this is why, you know, we talk about this, and it's so important, because like everything, all of the bad stuff, everything from that 4 years of a pressure cooker that happened, you know, leading up to January 6th, that it just, it all exploded, you know, from COVID to the Black Lives Matter protests and all of the stuff that Trump did to bring us to that point. He did what he always does, and he threw a 55-gallon drum of diesel fuel on that fire, and wouldn't you know it, it exploded. And I don't understand the people, you know, who know better but don't do better. I don't understand, and what I mean by that is, we talked about it, how people can see what happened with their own eyes. They can see what was there. They know what happened on January 6th. It doesn't take someone with any formal education whatsoever. My 4-year-old daughter would watch that video and say, those guys are the bad guys. And I don't understand how people can internalize keeping that bold-faced lie going. It goes against everything you were taught as a child, I hope. Everything you were taught as a child. Right from wrong. Bad from good. How to treat people with kindness. And I don't understand that. You know, one of the things I also learned when I was reading the January 6th committee report. Did you know that Sidney Powell, who was Donald Trump's lawyer throughout this whole thing, and who would, you know, throw all of these crazy accusations of 30,000 dead people voting and all this, you know, a truckload of ballots coming down from New York and going into Pennsylvania, which, by the way, how this worked, if you have time, you can read the audiobook too. It's 24 hours, by the way. How this worked is, one day, at late afternoon, Donald Trump would hear these facts of, you know, okay, the FBI would come and say, Mr. Trump, no, there was not 30,000 dead people that were voting. We did find two who voted by absentee, and they did die in this precinct. And so there was two in this whole state. He knew the truth. He knew the truth. And the very next day, he would go on the news and tweet out. He would say, 30,000 dead people are voting. When he knows, he was told hours before that it's BS. And so Sidney Powell, who was the lawyer, you know, the crackpot lawyer that was throwing all these accusations out there, this was her defense. When she had to go face a judge, and the judge was like, dude, what the hell was that all about? Right? You know, he didn't say that, but, you know, we're paraphrasing here. Her defense for herself was, and I quote, no reasonable person would conclude that her statements were truly statements of facts. I'll read that again. Her defense was, no reasonable person would conclude that her statements were truly statements of fact. So her defense of why she did all of this was, I can't possibly be guilty because all of this stuff was so crazy, y'all should have known that I was lying. That was, and look it up, that was her defense. And the hypocrisy of all of this is that the F your feelings crowd, right? We all say that, oh, screw your feelings. It's the Trump derangement syndrome. You're just suffering from, you know, liberal snowflake. Okay, those people is cheering on someone whose goal in everything he does is to jab and poke and everything from, you know, renaming the Gulf of Mexico to the Gulf of America to Denali, Fort Bragg, talk about we're going to use plastic straws again. We're going to make straws great. All of that stuff, it's nothing burgers. It is just strictly designed to piss off people who don't like him. And then the second someone takes exception to that, like to say, well, that's really stupid. It's been the Gulf of Mexico for like, what, 500 years? Oh, my goodness. How could you? That's just. And so you had 4 years of that leading up to January 6th. And wouldn't you know it, all hell broke loose and people died. And thanks to people like Officer Harry Dunn, a lot more people could have died, but didn't. And so this is why it's so important. You know, and I agree with Adam Kinzinger. Boy, before Donald Trump, I was at the point where it's like, yeah, okay, we can kind of get past this. Not anymore. There is no excuse for giving a pass to this. And the only way that we are going to overcome, the only way that this gets better, is when those people receive justice and those people who egged it on are no longer shuffling around the halls of power in the United States of America. I love you guys. Thank you so much for listening. And we will talk to you next week.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.